Now there are people who do the nine Buddha ceremony professionally. So you can hire them for that puja. So they will come to your house with everything needed for the ceremony. They'll bring the Buddha statues, pictures, and then temporary altars made of banana, how do you call that, box. So when I came to this country and I led many retreats at the Mount Mary Immaculate for many years, and whenever I give a talk, I have to bring my own tape recorders and I have to operate it myself. And so I was joking with the other monks. I am like that, those persons who do the puja for the nine Buddhas. So today also there are many. So I brought this in case this doesn't work. This is another one.
Hey, you want me to pass?
No. Today's talk will be shorter. I'll cut it to 1.5 hours. So tomorrow, I mean yesterday, we were at dukkha, right? So five aggregates are called dukkha because they are constantly oppressed by rise and fall. Now this is one of the three reasons given in the commentaries. The second reason given in the commentaries is that they are dukkha because they are the basis for suffering. They are the seat of suffering. Basis for suffering means because there are the five aggregates, there is suffering. Because there we have five aggregates, we suffer. Now we suffer a lot because we have these five aggregates. We see something we don't want to see and we suffer. We hear something we don't want to hear and there is suffering, and so on. We don't want to get sad, we don't want to get depressed, but we do get sad or depressed and we suffer. And all this suffering we have to endure because we have these five aggregates. If we do not have these five aggregates, there will be no suffering. And also, when we have five aggregates, we have aging, disease, death, and so we suffer. So we encounter a lot of suffering simply because we have the five aggregates. So these five aggregates are called suffering or dukkha, because they are the basis for suffering. So in this sense also, the five aggregates of clinging are called dukkha. And the third reason given is that they are called dukkha because they are fearsome. They are fearful, they are dreadful. Again, when we have these five aggregates, we suffer a lot of suffering, and so they are fearful to us. So since they are fearful, because they bring with them a lot of suffering, aging, death, disease, and others, they are called dukkha, suffering. So we should understand, or we should practice meditation so that we see or we understand that the five aggregates are dukkha. The five aggregates are suffering. And they are called suffering for three reasons again. And the first reason is because they are constantly oppressed by rise and fall. And the second reason because they are the basis for suffering. And the third reason is that because they are fearful, they are fearsome. So they are called dukkha. Now, in order to include the other meanings of suffering, nowadays others translate dukkha as unsatisfactory. So rather than translating it as suffering, they translate it as unsatisfactory. I think it is a little better. So anything that is impermanent is unsatisfactory. We want things to be permanent, we want to be permanent, we want to live permanently, but we will not get what we want. And so there is no satisfaction with these five aggregates, and so they are unsatisfactory. With regard to dukkha too, we need to understand three things. What is it that is dukkha? And what is the characteristic of dukkha? And what is dukkha nupassana, of seeing dukkha? So what is it that is dukkha? When we say dukkha, what do we mean? We mean the five aggregates, so that are also impermanent, anicca. So the same five aggregates that are impermanent are dukkha or suffering. And what is the characteristic or mark or the sign of the dukkha? Now you already know that. Oppression by rise and fall. So we see that everything in the world, or the five aggregates, are oppressed by rise and fall constantly. So the characteristic for being dukkha is a constant oppression. Constant oppression by rise and fall. As I explained last night, the oppression by rise and fall is constant, it is always, and there is not a single moment in our lives when we are not oppressed by rise and fall. So that constant oppression by rise and fall is the characteristic or mark of dukkha. And what is dukkha nupassana? Repeated seeing of dukkha. So repeated seeing of dukkha means seeing five aggregates to be dukkha while watching them and seeing the constant oppression by rise and fall. Now that means dukkha nupassana is the understanding or knowledge you get from the real observation of five aggregates. So only when you observe the five aggregates and you see them being constantly oppressed by rise and fall, that you really have this vipassana knowledge. So this vipassana knowledge, understanding that the five aggregates are dukkha, can be attained only through the practice of vipassana meditation. And actually, Only when you are practicing vipassana meditation. If you are not practicing vipassana meditation, you do not see the rise and fall of the aggregates. Only when you practice vipassana and you make notes of, or you watch the five aggregates that are at the present moment, and then you see them rise and fall, and so you are convinced that these five aggregates are oppressed by rise and fall constantly. So the real seeing of dukkha of five aggregates can be attained only when you are seeing, only when you are watching the five aggregates. So while watching the five aggregates, a yogi sees the five aggregates rise and fall, and so he understands that the five aggregates are oppressed by rise and fall constantly. When he sees that they are oppressed by rise and fall constantly, he knows that the five aggregates are dukkha. So that kind of seeing, that kind of understanding, that kind of knowledge is what is called dukkha nupassana. Now let us study the other aspects given in the answer given by the Venerable Sariputta. So the Venerable Sariputta said that a monk, a bhikkhu who is virtuous and instructed, should attend to the five aggregates of clinging as impermanent. That means he must practice meditation so that he sees the five aggregates of clinging as impermanent that we already studied, and then he must see them as suffering. This also we have studied. And then he must see the five aggregates of clinging as a disease. There are 11 aspects taught in this discourse. So the bhikkhu who is virtuous and instructed must see five aggregates of clinging as a disease. Now here a disease means a chronic disease. So when a person has a chronic disease, he has to take care of that disease, he has to take medicine, and he had to avoid taking things that are not fit or not proper. And so he always has to take care. However much he takes care of the disease, it is never cured. Sometimes it may decrease and sometimes it may increase. So when a person has such a disease, I don't know whether some of you have some kind of such disease. Diabetes, high blood pressure, and what else? Chronic diseases. So when you have a chronic disease, you are not free, you cannot eat anything you like to eat. Even those who have who do not have those diseases are afraid to get those diseases, and so they are trying to avoid food that will cause them to get that disease, like reducing the intake of salt, sugar, oil, and so on. So you have to take care of the disease. When you have the disease, you have to take care of it. And however much you take care of it, it still is there. So in the same way, however much you find fault with the five aggregates, you still have these five aggregates, and you have to attend to these five aggregates, and you have to avoid food that are not suitable for the body, and you have to avoid living in a climate that is not suitable for the body, and many other things you have to take care of, simply because you have these five aggregates. So these five aggregates can be viewed as a disease, a chronic disease. Next, the bhikkhu must see the five aggregates of clinging as a tumor, as a sore. So when you have a tumor or sore, that oozes out despicable things like blood and pus, and it gives a lot of pain to you, and you have to take care of that also with medicines and so on. And so the five aggregates are like a tumor. Many despicable things ooze out of the five aggregates. Greed, hatred, delusion, pride, envy, and many other things. Now, they ooze out of the eye, of the ear, of the nose, of the tongue, of the body, and of the mind. So they are always oozing out. So we see something beautiful, and what oozes out of our eyes? Greed, attachment. And we see something that we don't like, then anger oozes out of our eyes. And so always these things are oozing out of the five aggregates, and so they are like a tumor, a sore. So we must, a bhikkhu who is virtuous and instructed must see these five aggregates of clinging as a tumor also, as a sore also. And the monk must also see five aggregates of clinging as a dart. That means as a thorn. Now, when a thorn has got into your body, it causes pain. So whenever you touch that place, you have a sharp pain. In the same way, the five aggregates give us suffering, suffering of different kinds. Because we have the eyes, we have to suffer the objects we don't want to see. Because we have the ears, we have to suffer the sounds we don't like to hear, and so on. And so they are like thorns in one's flesh. And since the thorn has got into the flesh, it is not easy to get out. So the five aggregates of clinging are like a thorn, or to be viewed as a thorn, giving us suffering. And also he is to see the aggregates of clinging as misery. Now, the original Pali word is agha. Agha. And this is explained in one commentary as dukkha. If we take this word to mean dukkha, it would be the same as the word suffering we already met. But in Visuddhimagga, it is explained in a different way. And so there it is said, it is agha, because it is censurable like akusala. Now, akusala, or unwholesome karma, is called akusala because it is censurable by noble beings and it gives undesirable, painful results. So like akusala, the five aggregates are censurable because it gives us pain. They give us pain, they give us suffering, and they bring bad results. So the five aggregates of clinging are to be viewed as being like akusala. And then they are to be seen as affliction. Now, affliction means occasional sickness. Sometimes we get cold, diarrhea, or some fever, and so these also give us trouble, these also give us suffering. So you are sick for 1 or 2 days and you cannot do what you like, you cannot take food and so on, and so there is suffering through this sickness. Or you have cold, or you have indigestion, you have diarrhea. So all these, although they are occasional sickness, they are those that afflict us. So in the same way, the five aggregates are like occasional sickness. Since we have these five aggregates, we cannot do what we like, we have to look after these five aggregates, and we have to avoid what is not suitable for these five aggregates, and so on. And so a monk is instructed to see these five aggregates of clinging as affliction or as occasional sickness. The aspects have we studied now. As impermanent, as suffering, as a disease, as a tumor, as a doubt, as misery, as an affliction. 7. Out of these 7, as suffering, as disease, as tumor, as doubt, as misery, and as affliction, are actually the aspects of being dukkha. So dukkha can be, the five aggregates can be seen as dukkha or as disease and so on. So when we see the five aggregates as a disease or as a tumor and so on, we see the dukkha aspect of these five aggregates. And next is as alien. So as alien means as an outsider. So a person who is an alien is not in our power. We cannot have authority over that person, and so that we call an alien. So we have to see five aggregates of clinging as alien, as outside, as an outsider, as something we have no authority over. So this alien means just the aspect of anatta. So now we come to the anatta nature of things. The teaching of anatta is the most distinctive feature of Buddha's teachings, and it is most difficult to understand, and it is most misunderstood and misinterpreted of Buddha's teachings. Now, Buddha appeared at a time when most people strongly believed in the existence of an entity called Atman or Atta. Almost all other faiths believe in one kind of Atta or another. But Buddha appeared and then he taught that there is no Atta, or there are only five aggregates, and these five aggregates are not Atta. So it is very difficult to understand. Now, in order to understand Anatta, we first need to understand the Atta. And again, and during the time of the Buddha, Atta is seen as different things. Atta is seen as a master. Atta is seen as a person who lives forever, I mean, who lives permanently in some place. Atta is seen as something who performs the actions. And also Atta is seen as someone or something who really experiences or who really enjoy or suffer. So according to that view, there is what is called an Atta in our body. Different from our body, there is something called an Atta. And that Atta is a master. He is master of him. The Atta is master of itself. And it is master of the body. Now, there are some people who think that they are master of themselves. They can do what they want to do. They say what they want to say. They eat what they want to eat. They go where they want to go. And if they really think that they are master of themselves, they should simply practice meditation for 5 minutes and see whether they can keep their mind on the objects. So when they practice, they will really see that they are not the master of themselves. Their mind would go out quite often, and it would not stay on what he wants it to stay. And so there is this this helplessness in us, in the face of the five aggregates, actually. So although we think that we can say what we like, we can think of what we want to think of, but actually, if we try to train our mind on one object, we see that we are no masters of ourselves. We are at the mercy of our mind. And so, the sense of anatta, not atta, manifests to us when we try to practice meditation. We are no masters of ourselves. There is nothing that is master of this body, actually. There are people who think that there is something called an Atta in our body, and it lives in the body, it enters our bodies at the moment of conception or moment of rebirth, and it lives in our body for the whole life, and when we die, it would leave our body and get into a new body, and it will go on like that. So it will never die, although the physical body will die. So it is one belief in Atta, which many people during the time of the Buddha had. And I think, are you really free from this notion? Even Buddha says something like this, right? There is a soul or Atta, and then they will say, when we die, it will go out of our mouth or our nose, something like that, right? So we, even Buddhists still have such beliefs. So this is called a belief in the Atta as something that abides in us permanently. Permanently means it will change from one body to another, and it goes on without becoming impermanent. So it is permanent, it goes on from one life to another, one body to another, only that this physical body becomes deteriorated and would die. So they compare this to wearing new clothes. When the old clothes get old and dirty, then a person will leave the old clothes and then get into new clothes. So in the same way, this Atta, this Atman, will reside in our bodies, and when our bodies become old, then it will move to another new body and so on. And this understanding has some dreadful, what do you call that, consequences. Now there is a teaching in one book, not in Buddhist books, where it is said, you cannot kill the other. So even if you kill a person, you are just killing the physical body of that person and not his Atta. So it is right to kill if there is need to kill. Suppose you are fighting a battle. Then in a battle you have to kill other people, and you don't want to kill them. But people who have such opinions will tell you, just go on and kill them. It is your duty to kill, say, your enemies. And even though you kill them, you are not killing the Atman. The Atman will go on and on and on. It can never be killed. So this kind of notion can have dire consequences if taken too far. And also there are some people who think that there is again an Atta, and this is that Atta that does the things we do. When we do something, it is not us that do the actions, but the Atta. So whatever we do is actually the actions of Atta. So that is one aspect of the view of Atta. And there is another view that it is Atta that experiences, that enjoys, or that suffers. So when we enjoy something, it is not us that that enjoy, but the Atman. So it is the Atman that enjoy, and when we suffer also, it is the Atman that that suffer and so on. So they believe in those things, and so for them, Adda is very real. So whenever you experience something, it is the Adda that that experiences and not you. When you do something, it is Adda that does and not you, and so on. So all these Buddha rejected. So Buddha came and in his, let us say, second sermon. In his second sermon, Buddha taught that Rupa is not Adda, Vedana is not Adda, and so on. And also later Buddha taught that there is no Adda in Rupa, no Adda in Vedana, and so on. So Buddha rejected this view of a permanent entity, a view of Atman. And it is very important that we see this anatta nature of five aggregates of clinging, or anatta nature of mind and matter. In order to see the anatta nature of things, you need to practice meditation, you need to practice vipassana meditation. So only through vipassana meditation can you see that rupa and others are not self or not atta, and there is no atta in rupa and others. Now, at one time, I was leading a retreat in Florida, and one night I talk about anatta. And next day at the interview, a woman yogi told me she was unable to go to sleep the previous night because she was very angry with me. She believed in the presence of or existence of Atta and so on. And so I was saying there was no Atta, and so she was very angry, she said. So I told her, okay, I am a Buddhist monk. And so when I give a talk, I will say there is no Atta following the teachings of the Buddha. But do not take my word for it. Do not take the Buddha's words even. But next time you practice meditation, try to find it. So if you find it, hold on to it, and Buddha was wrong. So if you cannot find it, or if you do not find it, do what you like. So I said that way, but she didn't. She didn't give answer to me on the following days. So I'm not sure whether she found or she did not. So when you practice vipassana, you watch, right? So you watch the mind, you watch the matter, you watch your thoughts, emotions, you watch your breath, movement of the abdomen, and so on. And when your concentration and understanding become mature, you begin to see the objects, mind and matter, or the five aggregates clearly. So you begin to see them clearly, and then you know what they are. And then you also see them rise and fall. So when you see that at every moment there is the object that is noted and the mind that knows. You can find only these two things at every moment of your meditation. You are aware of the breath. So there's the breath, and there is the awareness of the breath, or mindfulness of the breath. So there are only these two things, and there is nothing in the form of a person administering the mindfulness of the breath. So at such home moment, we see only the breath and the mindfulness of the breath, and there is nothing more. We cannot see an atta there. Only when you see through vipassana meditation that there is no Atman or there is no permanent entity involved in seeing, hearing and so on, do you see the anatta nature correctly. And so anatta nature can be seen only through the practice of vipassana meditation. So when you practice vipassana meditation, you will come to see that there is no such thing as a master, no such thing as an abider, or the permanent abider. There is no such thing as a doer, and no such thing as an experiencer. There is only the experience. There is only the doing, and no doer and no experiencer. So at every moment of any experience, you can see for yourself that no person, no individual, no atta is involved, but just the doing action, or just the experiencing action. So through vipassana, you come to see the another nature of things. So this is one kind of another nature. Now there is another nature, and that is having no authority over it. When you see mind and matter arise and disappear, you know that you cannot interfere with that process. You cannot tell them, oh, please wait a moment, just stop. Just stop arising or just stop disappearing. You cannot do that. So you cannot have authority over these. Actually, you are helpless. They just arise and they disappear by their own nature or by their own free will, and not at your free will. So this is also an aspect of anatta, that having no authority over it or insusceptibility to authority. But to anatta also, we need to know three things. What is it that is anatta? And what is the characteristic of anatta? And what is anatta nupassana? Now, what is it that is anatta? The same five aggregates. The same five aggregates are not self. And the same five aggregates have no self. Now, when you find the word anatta, you must be careful. Sometimes it is translated as without atta. But when we say, let us say rupa, rupa is without atta, we may mean that there is atta, but rupa is not atta. So anatta really means not atta. It is negation of rupa being atta. So when you say rupa is anatta, we mean rupa is not atta, not soul, not self. So sometimes I'm not comfortable with the translation soullessness. Anatta is sometimes translated as soullessness. It is soulless. But there can be some soul somewhere. So the word anatta comes from na and atta. So na means no and atta means self. So anatta means no self. So this word anatta can mean that it is not self, and when we extend the meaning, it can mean also it is not in our authority. We cannot have any authority over it, and it has no core. Now, some trees have inner core, the hardwood. So, and the rupa has no such core. That means something that lasts forever, that is permanent. So, anatta has how many meanings? Not atta. No authority over it. No core. Three meanings. It is not atta. That atta can mean authority and core. So when we say anatta, we mean one of these three things. It is not atta. Or we cannot have any authority over it. It has no core. It is not core. So this is called the characteristic of anatta. The fact that we cannot exercise any authority over it points to that being anatta. So what is it that is anatta? The five aggregates. What is the mark of anatta having no authority and also having no core or being no core? And understanding that five aggregates are anatta through observation of the five aggregates, or during the observation of five aggregates, is called anatta nupassana, or repeated seeing or repeated observation of anatta.
Chúng ta cũng đối với cái sự vô ngã thì cũng có ba cái câu hỏi: cái gì là vô ngã, thứ hai là những đặc tính của sự vô ngã, và thứ ba là suy nghĩ về cái sự vô ngã. Thì thứ nhất, cái gì là vô ngã thì ngũ uẩn là vô ngã, ngũ uẩn không phải là ngã và không có cái ngã, ngũ uẩn không phải là ngã, ngũ uẩn không có ngã. Thì sư nói là chúng ta nên cẩn thận khi người ta nói là không có ngã. Cái này.
There is one more thing to note in connection with anatta. So here in this discourse, as well as in Visuddhimagga, the answer to what is it that is anatta is the same five aggregates. So the same five aggregates are impermanent, they are suffering, and they are the anatta. But there is nibbana. Is nibbana atta or anatta? Nibbana is also anatta, because it is not atta. But nibbana is not mentioned here in this discourse or in the Visuddhimagga at this place, because it is the context of vipassana. So when we are talking about vipassana, we do not include nibbana, because nibbana is not the object of vipassana. Only the five aggregates of clinging can be the object of vipassana. So when you practice vipassana, you take five aggregates of clinging as object, and you do not take nibbana as object. Because The purpose of vipassana, the purpose of vipassana is to see the three characteristics. Nibbana has no these three characteristics. There are no these three characteristics, impermanence and so on, in Nibbana. So however much you watch Nibbana, even if you can, you will never see impermanence of Nibbana, suffering of Nibbana. But Nibbana is anatta and not atta. So this we must understand. When we are talking about vipassana, when we are in the context of vipassana, then we just leave out Nibbana, simply because it is not, or it cannot be, the object of vipassana. But if we are speaking in general, say, what is it that is anatta, then we may say the five aggregates and also Nibbana. Characteristics of impermanence, suffering, and not soul are called the general characteristics of all conditioned phenomena, because we find these three characteristics in all conditioned phenomena, that means in all aggregates, in all mind and matter. And it is very important that we see these three characteristics, because without seeing these three characteristics, we cannot progress in our practice of vipassana meditation, and we cannot reach the stage of enlightenment. And in order to see these three characteristics, there is no other way but to practice vipassana or satipatthana meditation. Now, we also need to know what conceals these characteristics, or why those who do not practice meditation cannot see these three characteristics, and how these concealments are broken. We need to know what results can we get from understanding or seeing the five aggregates as impermanent, suffering, and non-soul. So we'll learn them tomorrow.
Sorry.